Peace.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanz, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Wednesday, February 5th, 2025. The chairperson of RJMAC says South Sudanese leaders have little time to implement the 2018 peace agreement.
It is therefore critical that the activities on the part of the RTKNU are actively energized and injected with a sense of urgency as a new extended period commences on 23rd of February 2025.
And a U.S. representative at a U.N. Security Council meeting says the Kiir administration has done very little for the people of South Sudan.
We call on the transitional government to act without further delay to start to transparently and responsibly use public revenue for appropriate public purposes rather than to benefit a small, corrupt elite.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Security Council is holding a meeting on the situation in South Sudan right now. The chairperson of the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Mechanism, a body charged with monitoring the 2018 peace agreement, says the implementation of the agreement is very slow. The chairperson of the group, Ambassador Charles Gitao, addressed the members of the Security Council, stressing the need for the council leaders to visit South Sudan.
With the extended transition period due to begin just over 2 weeks, key immediate requirements are the demonstration of political will and professional funding for the agreement institutions and mechanisms, the harmonization of the work plans of the National Election Commission and National Constitutional Review Commission, and completion of the unification of forces. Meanwhile, it is important to fully establish the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing. It is therefore critical that the activities on the part of the RTKNU are actively energized and injected with a sense of urgency as a new extended period commences on 23rd of February 2025. In conclusion, I therefore appeal to this Council to remain seized of the peace process in South Sudan, to consider conducting a visit to show solidarity with RTKNU as it enters its critical phase, and to encourage the international community to continue to mobilize resources and political support to help South Sudan achieve its first democratic elections in December 2026.
A U.S. representative at the meeting says the leaders of the Transitional Government of National Unity have done very little to provide services to South Sudanese.
The people of South Sudan deserve peace, freedom to participate in civic and political processes, and a government responsive to their needs. Instead, transitional government leaders have consistently failed to take the minimal steps required to create the conditions necessary to bring the transitional period to a peaceful conclusion. They've also failed to use public revenue transparently to address public needs while demanding the international community continue to fund basic public services. Despite significant international support, including from the UN, AU, and IGAD on key election issues, we see President Salva Kiir, First President Riek Machar, and other South Sudanese political leaders have thus far collectively failed to meet the standards necessary for free, fair, and peaceful elections to take place. South Sudan's leaders have not demonstrated political will to seriously move towards elections, nor demonstrated a commitment to political and civic space. In fact, they have made matters worse, as evidenced by their giving the National Security Service warrantless arrest and detention powers. January 9, 2025 marked the 20th anniversary of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, a pivotal moment in South Sudan's history that brought hope to a people long ravaged by war and oppression. However, two decades later, the CPA's promise of peace, prosperity, and a responsive government remains unfilled. Instead of being a cause for celebration, the anniversary was a reminder of the failure of South Sudan's leaders to meet the expectations of their own people and of the international donor community who have long provided their country with support. We call on the transitional government to act without further delay to start to transparently and responsibly use public revenue for appropriate public purposes rather than to benefit a small, corrupt elite. We call on them to open civic and political space as a path towards free, fair, and peaceful elections and allow citizens to meaningfully engage in domestic government, to fund electoral institutions, establish the necessary unified forces, and engage high-level dialogue in Juba where all parties reject violence as a political tool. South Sudanese leaders, both signatories and non-signatories to the 2018 peace agreement, must take the opportunity of the Tumani talks in Nairobi to discuss a path forward to peace. We welcome Kenya's decision to continue to host these talks, which are all the more important in the absence of signs of serious effort by Juba-based leaders to meet peace commitments.
A representative of Sierra Leone also told the UN Security Council members that the African Union's visit to South Sudan last month was to encourage South Sudanese leaders to implement the 2018 peace agreement.
We recognize Kenya's leadership in the Tumani Initiative and commend the engagement of His Excellency President Salva Kiir of South Sudan and His Excellency President William Ruto of Kenya, alongside the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, in advancing the peace process. The AAA commenced the ministerial visit to Juba, undertaken by the members of the African Union Ad Hoc High-Level Committee on South Sudan, the C5, namely Algeria, Chad, Nigeria, Rwanda, and South Africa, on 16 and 17 January this year. Through this solidarity visit, the C5 members reaffirmed the unwavering support of the African Union to the peace process in South Sudan. In noting this notable achievement, the AAA, however, remains concerned about key challenges. First, on the electoral process, and with elections rescheduled for December 2026, urgent action is needed to finalize transitional security arrangement and establish a middle command structure for the necessary unified forces. We believe that the implementation of an electoral roadmap represents a critical component for a successful election. We also believe that in preparing for such a roadmap, consideration should be given to the participation of internally displaced people and returnees in the election, an issue which was not addressed in the National Elections Act. We echo the Secretary General's call on the South Sudanese parties to use the 2 years extension to implement the main pending task, particularly the constitution-making process, the unification of forces and voters' registration. Furthermore, we emphasize the importance of an inclusive electoral process where all South Sudanese are on board. Second, the AAA is of the view that there is a need for a credible national census and inclusive electoral process. A national census is critical for fair elections, especially noting that the National Bureau of Statistics estimates at least 16 months to complete it. In this regard, we urge the South Sudan authorities to ensure this is conducted in a timely manner with the support of regional and international partners. Additionally, a transparent voter registration process, open civic space, and active engagement of political parties, civil society, and the media are essential for a free, fair electoral process. Third, the AAA remains concerned about frequent incidents of fatal intercommunal violence and human rights violations that persist across regions. We regret and remain concerned about the growing incidence of intercommunal violence, extrajudicial killings, and sexual and gender-based violence, which pose a grave threat to the stability and development of South Sudan.
The head of the UN mission in South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, also briefed the UN Security Council members on the situation in South Sudan. South Sudan delegate is yet to speak at the meeting, which is going on right now. Elon Musk's rapid takeover of two U.S. government agencies has enabled the South African-born billionaire to exert unprecedented control over America's 2.2 million member federal workforce and begin a dramatic reshaping of government. Reuters reports that the world's richest man and an ally of President Donald Trump, Musk, 53, has in 2 weeks created a new center of power in Washington. This as he executes Trump's cost-cutting initiative to reduce the size of the U.S. government. Musk's critics, including Democratic lawmakers, have accused him of a hostile takeover of the government. Analysts are also concerned that Musk, whose companies have multiple contracts with U.S. government, have been in a position that would raise many questions about conflict of interests. Unions representing the employees filed a lawsuit Tuesday to block the administration's plan to offer buyouts, even as U.S. officials told Reuters that more than 20,000 employees were planning on quitting. Scientists are testing a novel technique to deter poachers targeting endangered rhinos for their prized horns. As part of a pilot study in South Africa, researchers have injected small radioactive pellets into the horns of the rhinos. The goal is to make the horns radioactive so that there is less demand for them on the black market. Maurice de Klerk reports from the UNESCO Waterberg Biosphere Reserve in South Africa.
Three Quarters is one of 20 rhinoceros in a pilot study in which radioactive pellets were injected into their horns. This 2.5 metric ton bull has received the highest dose in the study by the conservation research initiative, the Rhizotope Project. The goal is to make rhino horns radioactive to decrease the demand for them on the black market and to discourage rhino poachers who are trying to profit. Researchers are testing the rhino's blood to make sure the animals are not being harmed.
We've all been looking and trying to find the silver bullet to stop rhino poaching, and I think this could just be what we need to stop poaching in its tracks. It is a brilliant idea.
Arie van Deventer is founder and managing director of the Rhino Orphanage, and he oversees the research animals in South Africa's Waterberg region. 6 months ago, orphanage staff helped scientists insert the radioactive pellets into the horns of wild rhinos. Recently, South African and American scientists returned to take more blood samples of the research animals and measure the gamma rays that the pellets emit.
Harming the animal is the most important thing to make sure that it's completely avoided. The radiation they're getting would be almost like somebody traveling internationally on a plane overseas for like two or three times a year. So it's very, very low.
James Larkin, who leads the internationally funded program, researched the radiation dose being used in the study.
Spent 2.5 years developing computer models of the animals and carrying out the tests and comparing these with results from the International Commission on Radiation Protection. And our results compare extraordinarily favourably.
But Larkin says the dose is still strong enough to set off radiation detectors at international borders, making it more difficult to smuggle the horns. Rhinos in Africa have long been targeted by poaching syndicates that feed the black market demand for rhino horns in Asia, pushing the world's five rhinoceros species toward extinction. In parts of Asia, rhino horns are believed to have medicinal benefits, although there is no scientific evidence to back up that claim. Larkin says if finally approved, the technology would be more cost-effective than the current strategy of discouraging poaching by dehorning rhinos every 2 years. This is because rhino horns grow continuously.
Should be four more.
For Van Deventer, the rhino poaching situation is dire, so he's eager for the project results. Scientists hope blood tests will confirm that the animals are still healthy. Test results are expected in about 2 months. If funding permits, the technology could be offered to rhino owners by the end of this year. Marise de Klerk, VOA News, Waterberg, South Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Nigeria looks for ways to support health programs affected by recent developments in the United States. Find out more after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom for today comes from Eastern Equatoria State.
Hello, I am Richard Otoba Steven from Eastern Equatoria State to read having a proverb in Orugo language. It says, Ongiyo eni amyang maji analaranierik, being translated in English as a goat grazes at where it is tightened by the owner. It majorly means you should live and graze at where life has tightened you. Therefore, no need for competition, neither should there be a need of envy in our human lives.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nigerian officials have launched a committee to develop a plan for transition and sustainability for U.S.-funded health programs following U.S. President Donald Trump's 90-day halt of most foreign aid. The multi-ministerial committee aims to secure new financial support for critical health programs. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigeria's health minister said the committee, comprising officials from the Ministries of Finance, Health and Environment, intends to ensure that patients receiving treatment for HIV, tuberculosis and malaria do not experience setbacks amid the uncertainty of U.S. foreign policy. Shortly after taking office 2 weeks ago, U.S. President Donald Trump ordered a 90-day pause on U.S. foreign aid. But days later, he approved a temporary waiver for life-saving humanitarian assistance covering medicine, medical services, food and shelter. Despite the exemption, concerns remain over the future of U.S. funding for global health programs. Public health analyst Ejike Oji welcomed Nigeria's proactive response to the U.S. funding freeze.
What this means is they are going to do a review, situation assessment of what's going on, and that will be able to give them opportunity to make a recommendation to the government. They gave a 90-day review because of the strategic importance of continuing the HIV program in Nigeria. They gave a waiver. So that means there's still a possibility at the end of 90 days after their review, they might say, look, we don't want to continue this funding.
Nigeria is a significant recipient of U.S. foreign aid, receiving $1.02 billion in 2023, much of it through agencies like the USAID. USAID funding to Nigeria plays a pivotal role in HIV and AIDS treatment, maternal and child care, and disease prevention efforts. On Monday, the Nigerian Federal Executive Council approved $1 billion for healthcare sector reforms and allocated an additional $3.2 million to procure 150,000 HIV treatment packs over the next 4 months. Authorities said the new funding will support improvements in primary healthcare services, maternal and child healthcare, and training of healthcare professionals. But in Dayo Aiwat, General Secretary of the Health Sector Reforms Coalition, says it will be difficult to sustain those programs without continued U.S. support.
Even when they are releasing the available funds on time and stuff, they will not be able to cover all the areas that those funds were helping them to achieve. So it will take probably 2-3 years.
Approximately 1.8 million Nigerians are living with HIV. The country also accounts for the world's highest number of malaria deaths and ranks among the top countries for tuberculosis cases. Aiwat says Nigeria needs new partnerships for health programs.
That is a multi-sectoral approach. It works on partnerships. They are taking things that they cannot do alone as a country. Going into resource pooling from many partners and stakeholders, it's a recommended approach to financing health activities.
Currently, only about 4% of Nigeria's annual budget is allocated to the health sector, far below the 15% target set by African leaders in the 2001 Abuja Declaration. It's unclear whether the U.S. will reverse its decision after the 90-day pause, but with uncertainty looming, analysts say careful implementation of policies and new partnerships may be Nigeria's best path forward. Timfi Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water, make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them, they see that they are not needed. And showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them, helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. U.S. President Donald Trump said he wants the U.S. to take ownership of Gaza, moving beyond his earlier statement of forcing Gazans to relocate to neighboring Jordan and Egypt. Trump made the stunning announcement Tuesday evening as he hosted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakwaswara has the report.
As hundreds of thousands of Gazans return to their demolished homes following the January 19th ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas, on Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump made a stunning announcement.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too.
Trump went beyond the suggestion he made last month to relocate Gazans to other countries, including Jordan and Egypt. He wants to develop the area into what he calls the Riviera of the Middle East.
Everybody I've spoken to loves the idea of the United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent in a really magnificent area that nobody would know. Nobody can look because all they see is death and destruction and rubble.
Trump made the announcement as he hosted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House.
I've said this before, I'll say it again. You are the greatest friend Israel has ever had in the White House.
Trump did not share details on how he plans to exert control over Gaza, an area ravaged by 15 months of war. He did not rule out sending U.S. troops. and it's unclear how occupying Gaza would fit into Trump's own stated goal of expanding the Abraham Accords to include Riyadh. He brokered the deal that normalized ties between Israel and Arab countries in 2020. Saudi Arabia has said it would only agree to recognize Israel if the Gaza war ends and Palestinians have a path to statehood. Mirat Mabrouk, senior fellow at the Middle East Institute via Zoom.
Shuffling them out of Palestine into neighboring countries is not a particularly auspicious start. So I think it's going to have quite a pronounced effect. Having said that, we don't know, as with so many things about President Trump. We just have to wait and see.
Trump's announcement on Gaza is his latest signaling of expansionist ambitions, following his statements to acquire Greenland from Denmark, take over the Panama Canal, and absorb Canada. Ahead of his meeting with Netanyahu, Trump also directed the restoration of his maximum pressure campaign on Iran to prevent it from getting a nuclear weapon. He also ended support for the UN agency that helps Palestinian refugees and withdrew the U.S. from the UN Human Rights Council, which he says is anti-Semitic. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, February 5th, 2025. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and his song, Zaman Kuruju Ja, which means it's time for you to till your land.
Samantha Kuruju Ja. Samantha Kuruju Ja. Waladi. Samantha Kuruju Ja. Yuma. Samantha Kuruju Ja. Biti.
Let me say, I got a bakulun. Let me say,
Kuruju, ya ode zamanda kuruju ja, yuma. Uzamanda kuruju ja, mweledi. Uzamanda kuruju ja, yaba. Uzamanda kuruju ja, iti.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zaman Takuruju Ja. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. For more information on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Patrick Dare, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.